This is the Hear Hear Podcast. Today we are joined by Danny Harrison, founder of Shred Foundation. Welcome to the program, Danny.
Thank you, bro. It's great to be here. This is sick.
Yes, sir. So first things first, man, you were one of the first people that was on a list.
Oh, yeah.
When we started the podcast, was just, we got to get Danny in here. So,
I'm honored.
And because you're an example of somebody who uses their power for good, you know, gives back to the community, which is exactly kind of our direction here, is like, you know, how do we take what we have and benefit the people around us? So yeah. I want to give you your flowers right off the rip with that.
Thank you. That's appreciated. It's greatly appreciated.
So, utmost respect. Let's get right into it, man. How did you get into skateboarding and snowboarding?
15 years ago, I was working in Brooklyn, in a high school in Brooklyn. I was doing after school programming and some other things. And Burton's Chill Foundation had a program in the school I was working in. And then the person who was the chaperone went back to school at night and she couldn't chaperone. And if they didn't have a chaperone, then there was no program. She asked me if I was chaperone. I'm like, I don't know anything about snowboarding. I was like, I'm a black guy from Central Ohio. There's no snow in Central Ohio. There's no mountains in Central Ohio. I don't know anything about snowboarding. And I played basketball, so I was not really a skater. My father was like, no. I think the first time I asked for a skateboard, they went and they brought me this, like, it looked like someone actually cut it on a bandsaw and put, like, you know, Leave It to Beaver skate wheels on the bottom of it. I was like, I'm not riding. It's like my friend up the street had a hobby, and I was like, he was riding. I'm like, I want one of those. I don't want this. So it was one of those things, and I feel bad about it now looking back. It was one of those things where I just chucked it. I was like, I don't want this. So that was kind of the beginning, the end of my, you know, my skateboarding intro. But back to, you know, snowboarding, I was working there and they needed a chaperone. There was one kid in particular named Gio who had been in the program for a couple of years, and he came to my office every day begging me to chaperone. You know, he's like, if you don't go, we can't go. Danny, please, yo, D, please. And I was like, finally, I was like, okay. And
what do you call that? That's not peer pressure. What is that?
Oh, that's kid pressure.
That's kid pressure. Dude, that's the next level.
That's juvenile delinquent pressure right there.
It's a whole nother level.
It's a whole nother level. You can't say no. I mean, it's one of those things.
I look up to you, Danny.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm doing it because of you. You know, it's like, no. So he kept coming by. And then at that time, my girlfriend, who I then went on to marry, she was from Vermont. She grew up snowboarding. My older daughter that lived in Ohio, she had started going to the ski with her ski club. So I was like, okay, well, I'll try it. And so I chaperoned that year. I fell in love with it. Came back and volunteered the next year. I chaperoned that first year, came back the second year as a volunteer. And then came back a third year as a volunteer. And during one of the Burton movie premieres in the Soho store, I was there and we were doing a raffle, and you know, at that time, you know, A-Dog was spinning, God bless him, and no one was paying attention to the raffles. I got up on the chair, I got up on the table and yelled, yo, it's raffle time, come get your raffle tickets. And somehow I got back up north to Burlington, and they were throwing around the idea of having a actually, wait a minute. Let me backtrack. I did a year, that third year, I was the New York City outreach. That's how I got in there. So I was New York City outreach. This situation happened. It ran up the flagpole back to Burlington. They were looking for a fundraising and events coordinator. And the executive director's sister, who was at the Soho store, was like, you better hire this guy.
Yeah.
And so I went up and interviewed, and I was the first fundraising and events coordinator, which was dope, because I would go into work in the morning and then spend the rest of the day over at 80 with marketing and just trying to figure out ways that we could have the actual brand. Because at that point in time, Chill is back then was nothing like it is now.
Mm.
You know, I went out a couple of years ago. They flew me out to Aspen as part of their Culture Shifters event. And so they had a bunch of the current Chill staff there, including the executive director. And I felt like a fossil because all they wanted to talk about was what Chill was like back. I mean, this was like 2009, 2010. We only had like, there's only six of us.
Yeah.
And now there's like, I don't know, there's like 600. I don't know. But that's how I got started. So
before that, you were in the school.
Yeah, I was working in the school.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your career? So what was your career that put you in?
I had done youth development forever. It was something that just came easy. I moved to New York from Ohio. I was working telecom, making pretty decent money, and then 9/11 happened.
Mm.
You know, I had the day after 9/11, I was one of the ones that was called back into Manhattan because I had to route all of the switches out of lower Manhattan everywhere else. So when the last tower went down, that was the Verizon hub, and that's where every data and voice circuit on the East Coast went.
Holy.
So I came in the next day, and the next day I was on the phone with all up and down the Eastern Seaboard, rerouting everything out of Tower 7, out of the Verizon into other places because people lost, you know, data. And so I was doing that. After 9/11, got laid off. It was between me and someone else, and the guy had seniority, so they let him stay. And, you know, I had a pretty decent severance package, so I just, you know, hung around, and I met a person who was doing poetry and doing youth development in the schools, and so she brought me in, and, you know, it's just something I've done since college, so it was easy, and that's kind of how that got started, and that's how I ended up working in the, you know, in the high schools. And
yeah, so you were queued up for that.
Yeah.
You've been queued up.
Oh, yeah, I've been queued up for it. So, it was something I did in college. You know, it was just normal for me.
Yeah.
But other than that, I was going into politics, you know. So before I moved to New York, I was a legislative aide in the Ohio House of Representatives. And I had a political track. And
wow.
I was like, I
talk about queuing up a set of skills, dude. Jeez.
Yeah, I was like, I can't stay in Ohio. I got to get out of here. So I left.
Yeah.
I was still studying. I was studying public administration, political science at NYU when I got into snowboarding.
Yeah.
And I remember my advisor, when I told him I was going to take the Chill job, he was like,
What
do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
Why would you do this?
I think I hopped on a microphone and made myself known.
Yeah, right?
Now
yeah.
I don't have a choice.
Yeah. So that was that it was crazy because I was like, you know, snowboarding took me off my career path.
Big time.
Big time. Big time. Like I was gung-ho in this direction. And then I found snowboarding. I was like, maybe I'll go do this.
This is way better
than
politics.
This is way better than politics. Way better, you know? And so, yeah. So, yeah, I was strictly looking to go into the political realm.
Yeah. This happened. Yeah. So then from Chill, what was the transition to walk in your own path?
Well, Chill, I was at Chill for a year. The idea was that my wife, who was from Vermont, went to UVM. Was going to come up, find a job. We were going to stay there. And I was dead set on staying at Burton until I retired.
Mm.
I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I love it here.
Yeah.
Like, the benefits are great. I get a ride in the morning. I can go like, yo.
I have a powder day clause.
Yeah. Yo, Jake is mad cool. I got a crazy Jake story that I tell all the time. But, you know, I got a bunch of Jake stories.
Let it rip. What do you got?
So, when I was working there, it was Thanksgiving or around Thanksgiving. It's around the holiday. So every year, Jake and Donna go around. They give the company holiday gifts. So for Thanksgiving, they give out like pies. You get to choose what pie you want for Thanksgiving. And then at Christmas, they have a Christmas gift. And so that morning, I got up and I decided I was going to go to Stowe and ride. So I got up. Went to Stowe, rode till probably about noon. I think I rode from like 9 to noon or whatever, and then came back to the office. And when I came to the office, my gift was on my desk. And having come from a different work culture, I was like, oh, shit. I wasn't at my desk and Jake came by to give me my present. I wasn't here. I was like, oh. Yeah. So I typed an email out to him real quick. His email was jake@burton.com. That was Jake's email. And so I emailed him. I was like, you know, I apologize. I got up this morning. I decided to go ride. And I'm sorry I wasn't there when you came by with the gift. I extremely apologize. No sooner did I hit send, then I got a response back from Jake. And all it says, like, that's where you should have been.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And after that, I was like, that was it.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good. I'm just here. I'm yeah. here for good. I'm yeah. here for good. And so my wife couldn't find work in Vermont. We were expecting at the time. So I had to resign and move back down to Brooklyn, which I'd cry the entire way from Burlington to Brooklyn. But that segued into, when I got back to Brooklyn, that's where I met Brian and Omar from Hoods to Woods.
Yeah.
And Brian, I had met that year at the U.S. Open. And so we were allowing him to use our chill gear at Mountain Creek. And so we got to talking and I wasn't doing anything. I had no job, whatever. And so I started working with Hoods to Woods. I was their program director for a few years. So I was working with them. I got, you know, I helped get there.
Shout out Hoods to Woods.
Yeah. Shout out to my guys, you know, Brian and Omar, my brothers.
Yes, sir.
So we, so yeah, I was doing that. At that time, they had moved from Mountain Creek to Big Boulder. We were doing a joint partnership with the Harold Hunter Foundation. So we were doing snowboarding. Harold Hunter was doing skating. And so I was writing the curriculum for both programs. So I wrote the curriculum for that partnership. I don't know if Harold Hunter used it anywhere else, but that was for that program. We wrote the curriculum. And so I did that. And then I got a call from Stoked. So Steve from Stoked, they had a position open. They had a senior program director's position open. And he said that people told him that he should interview me. And I came in, I interviewed, I got the job, and I had to leave Hoods to Woods. I went to Stoked, and I was their senior program director for a year. So I split time between New York and L.A., so those were the two programs were.
Wow.
So I would do programming in New York, and then I'd go out each, you know, for about a week, a month, to go out to L.A. and supervise the program in L.A. And then we got, you know, budget. We got laid off from that, and I went back and went back to Brian and Omar. They asked me to come back again. They let me come back again. And so I was program director again. But at this time, I had already moved to Beacon. And so I was in Beacon getting calls at 6:50 in the morning, like, the bus isn't here. What's going on? I mean, like all these, like on Sunday mornings. And it's one thing when, you know, you're on the bus, because my first stint with them, I was responsible for getting the van every morning.
Mm.
So that means I was up at 4:30. I was on the train by 5 from, we lived in Ditmas Park, which is technically like Crown Heights and everything else. It's Ditmas Park is the name that the real estate developers get it, but it was really, you know, it was really like Bushwick.
Yeah.
Or Flatbush. No, it's Flatbush. It was Flatbush. It was like West Flatbush. So I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, snowboard, all geared up, get on the train, take a 45-minute train ride to Times Square. Get out at Times Square, and right now it's probably about, you know, 5:30, 5:45.
With all your gear.
With all my gear. And the spookiest thing in the world is being in Times Square at like 5:30 in the morning. Because all the lights are still going on, but there's nobody on the street.
Yeah.
So I had to walk to the Lower West Side to pick up the van from the Lower West Side, like right on West Side on the right on the highway there. And so I had to get the van, drive the van to Bed-Stuy, pick up everybody, and then we would go to Mountain Creek. And then at the end of the day, I would have to take them back to Bed-Stuy, drop them off, take the van back down to the west side, lower west side of Manhattan, walk back through Times Square, which is now like everybody's there, get on the train and come all the way back to Brooklyn.
All with gear in hand.
And people were on the trains like, what is that, a surfboard?
Yeah.
And that was the first time where they were like, yo, black people really do this? I got so many looks, and it was like, yeah, it was crazy. I was just literally, it was like Vanilla Sky or something. I'm just walking through, there's nobody on the streets. So yeah, that was my job with Hoods to Woods. And so...
So as you, when you were in Beacon...
When I was in Beacon,
Before it was, if the bus isn't there, that means Danny's not there, which means I'm bigger. But right. You're now so far separated.
I'm so far separated from it that I'm getting phone calls, and I'm like, oh, my God, what's up with the bus? So I got to call the bus company and figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, my wife is next to me like, what the hell is going on? Why are you getting... So, you know, did that for about a year. Dan Broadway, I met Dan, that's when I met Dan, because Dan was doing Hell Track. And this is where there's Omar and Brian and I are tight. We're like brothers.
Yeah.
However, because we're three black guys doing the same thing with separate entities.
Yeah.
You get people out there be like, okay, well, why is he doing it? So there's always this outside noise,
yeah,
that's trying to create this competition between the two organizations. And part of it stemmed from the fact that for years Dan ran Hell Track, and Hell Track was a fundraiser for Hoods to Woods. And I was working for Hoods to Woods at the time, and you know, I got to know Dan. I got to meet Dan. And, you know, I'm working the event. Omar and I are working the event. And Dan came to me one day, and he was like, why don't you do your own thing? He was like, there's no programs in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
You know, there's no program in the Hudson Valley. From the what I've come to learn from the Hudson Valley to the Capital District, it's a huge snowboard scene.
That's massive.
That doesn't exist. Yeah. Kurt Morgan, I've come to learn from Brain Farm, is from Albany.
Well.
You know, I'm trying to find him. I was like, yo, can you give us some money? What's good?
Yeah.
But what happened was, since I was there locally, Dan was like, you should start your own
thing.
And I'll back you. And so Dan, technically, he will never consider this. I consider him as our co-founder.
Co-founder. Sick.
Because if it wasn't for Dan asking me to do it or telling me to do it, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Because, it was still, like, they're my brothers, and it's kind of like,
eh. Right.
But there was a need here. And that's the reason why I left Brooklyn to move to Beacon. A, the people in Brooklyn were getting on my nerves, like, oh, because I was a dad at this time, and like my daughter's a risk taker, so I let her take risks. But I got all the helicopter parents like, no, she shouldn't do that. I'm like, would you leave my kid alone?
Yeah,
I'm right here. I know what she's doing. And then I'm also running out in the street grabbing their kids that they're not paying attention to because they're too busy looking at their cell phones. So I was over it, and I'm like, we're getting out of here. I'm getting out of here, and I was closer to Hunter at the time. So Hunter, all the mountains north. It was like another 3 hour, because you count in traffic coming out of New York City, that adds an hour and a half to the drive.
Yeah, easily. Yeah.
So part of the reason was getting out was that, and I wanted to spend more time snowboarding.
Accessibility. Yeah. What year was that?
That was 2013, because we founded in 2014.
So yeah,
Dan came up with the idea, told me to figure something out.
Yeah, he pushed me off the edge.
Yeah, he was like, you need to do this. I'm back. You know, and he was you know, Capital Union 32 Co. He had the brands. He's like, and I will put the brands behind you.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yo, that's, I'd be stupid.
Let's go.
Not yeah. to. So,
what did the first programs look like? I mean, so you had a history. So you had a history building programs.
Yeah, I had a history working programs. Yeah, building curriculums, helping, you know, scale programs. So the first program, because when I moved to Beacon, I was again went back working with the same company that was in the city when I started with Chill. They happened to expand to Poughkeepsie, and they knew I was up here, so they came, knocked on my door. Asking if I would consider running the Poughkeepsie program. I was like, yeah, I'm on the job, so yeah, I'll go ahead and do it. So I poached kids from the middle school.
Yeah.
So the first year we had 8 kids, and you know, we're gonna, I haven't made the announcement, but it's gonna be, I'm hoping that'll be big at Wyndham starting next week. I have a meeting with them tomorrow. This will actually be our 10th season at Wyndham.
Whoa. Let's
yeah.
go.
So, yeah, this is 10 years that we've been to Wyndham. We started the first cohort was 2015. I had like 7 kids from the middle school that I recruited out of the middle school.
Yep.
I negotiated with, it was Dan got us into Wyndham because he knew Keith.
Yep.
And he told Keith about it. Keith then told the director of marketing at the time who... I can't remember her name now. It'll come to me, but she...
Yes.
Beth Stewart. Yeah, yeah Beth yeah. Stewart was head of marketing then. She was all about it. So we started with 6 or 8 kids. Every morning, I would, similar to Hoods of Woods, I'd drive to Poughkeepsie, go rent a van at Rent-A-Wreck. that was the name of the joint. The name of the joint was Rent-A-Wreck.
Yep.
And I proceeded to max out a credit card to take the kids to the mountain 6 times. And that was how we started.
Wow, so Wyndham was a partner right off the
bat. Right off the bat, yeah. Right off the bat. Wyndham, you know, was amenable.
Shout out Keith Kreischer, man.
Keith was another one. He was instrumental.
Head of park staff.
Yeah. So he's doing his thing now. But
yep.
Yeah, he reached out to Beth, and I got a meeting with Beth because I was trying to do it at Hunter forever because I was friends with Randy Hoos, and he knew I was trying to do this. He wanted it there. He was on board. The director of operations was on board. The director of marketing was just a,
yeah. That's so difficult with a lot of these programs is there's a lot of moving parts, and if not everyone sees the vision, it's harder. You know, there's a lot of voices, right? Yeah, there's a lot of opinions.
Totally.
So to actually get it moving. Yeah. Is, you know, one little hang up or a couple little hang ups can really. Yeah. So shout out to the partnership with Wyndham.
Oh yeah, they've been there for day one.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for them, this wouldn't exist. And they're supporting it every year and supporting it the way they have.
Yeah. Well, I think so. One of the biggest things that comes up with this conversation, specifically with snowboarding and snow sports, is barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the partnership is necessary to overcome that.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they provide everything. They provide the lessons. They provide the rentals. We provide all the outerwear. We provide the transportation. They actually now they provide the food, which is something that's just started within the past 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
So they provide lunch.
Yeah. So go back to like the beginning.
Yeah.
And kind of talk about how the program changed from that. The first runs where you were. Wrestling a group of kids together in a rental van and you know piecemealing this together to kind of how the programs look now, like some of that.
Yeah, it was a hustle because the first year I rented out, I maxed out the credit card, which my wife was not happy about whatsoever, not one iota. It took like about 4 years before I finally got enough money and where he was able to pay it off. The second year. I left my job and went to work for the Boys and Girls Club. And I did it specifically because the Boys and Girls Club had more kids, plus they had a van. Ah. So I came in, asked if I could use the van. So then we went from 8 kids to about 20 kids. And so we did that for
ulterior motive.
Ulterior motive. I came in there. I was like, yo, if I get this job, can I run my program here?
Yeah.
And can I use the van? And they were like, yeah. So we started the Boys and Girls Club in Newburgh. That was actually was a there was a woman who ran a coffee shop, Black Vanilla in Newburgh, who my friend Jesse was her barista, and she was he was teaching everyone how to be baristas, and he was at that time volunteering with us. And she was like, no, I want the program over here. So that the third year, so the second year we did with the Boys and Girls Club. And so the third year, that's when we got a grant from ShareWinner. So Constance Beverly, who's the CEO of ShareWinner, she became the CEO, and we knew each other from my time at Stoked because she would sponsor one of the LA kids' internship every summer at Stoked. She took over as CEO of ShareWinner, and she's like, I'm doing this. We have this money. You know, I want to see you get this off the ground. So that first year, she gave us $10,000 to get a bus. So we rented a bus. All the kids got picked up at Black Vanilla. Melanie and her staff made breakfast, hot chocolate. Everybody been through. It was like a community hub,
yeah,
which was similar, which ironic, not ironically, but in a way mirrored what was going on at Hoods to Woods, because Hoods to Woods ran out of a coffee shop called Bread-Stuy down in Bed-Stuy. And so the kids would come to the coffee shop. We would all pick them up. We would leave from the coffee shop. So it was kind of that type. It was that similar energy,
yeah,
where there was a local business in the community that was community oriented, community minded. So the kids would come down there, would get breakfast, would get hot chocolate, whatever. And then we would go out to the mountain and the parents would pick them up in the afternoon. So that we went from 20 to 45, 50. So we were running 50. And so with Shred, the one thing that I wanted to be different than all the other organizations that I worked with was that I wanted the kids to come back year after year. You know, that was one of the thing for me when I was working at all the programs who were like, there's no sense of us doing this if the kids don't snowboard.
Yeah.
If they don't master snowboard, if they don't stay involved.
Stay connected.
So because, you know, within the nonprofit, with any realm, you're looking at, you want to say how many kids you served. And I'm like, you know, it's fine to serve that many kids, but how many of those kids are still snowboarding? This was Gio. So it goes back to Gio. Gio came through Chill. He was the biggest Chill advocate in New York City and kept trying to get on as a coordinator or volunteer or whatnot, and they wouldn't hire him. And it was so bad because even that year I was working there, we shot a video and featured Gio in the video. And so they interviewed Gio for this video. And I had a friend, after I was done with Chill in Denver, they were showing it in Denver like 5 years later. And I was like, you featured this kid, but you're not bringing this kid. What's the end game? Yeah.
What's the end game in this?
Right. Yeah. So ours was, for me, it was always an end game. I wanted my kids to be snowboarders. Yeah. You know, I wanted them to know how to snowboard. I wanted them to fall in love with snowboard. I wanted them to understand the culture. You know, I wanted them to fall in love with it like we all fall in love with it.
Yeah, so, not talk about it like summer camp that I went to one time and I did that and that was cool. Like, I want you to see why we do this.
Yeah,
see why we're here.
When I was at Chill, I would go and try to promote the program, part of my job. And what I would get from the message boards, wherever I went, is like, well, I mean, that's cool. They go one time, they go one season and they never come back. What's good is that? And I'm like, you got a point. You got me there.
Exactly.
So that was how this was built in. This was built in to actually bring them back. So we created room for kids to come back. So it swelled from 50. I mean, to like 40 to 50, then it got to 60, 65, because then kids' families would bring them up to Wyndham. They wouldn't even put them on the bus. They would drive them up to Wyndham to be a part of it. So it went to about 65, and that's when we got Ronnie and some of the other kids have been in the program now. Like right now, I have Maya, who started our program when we were at Black Vanilla. She's my coordinator this year. You know, and so Ronnie
able to integrate, give them.
And Ronnie, who started that same year or the year after, he's now filming with Snowboy. You know, so that the goal was to provide them these opportunities to find what they love within the, you know, within the industry or however, but keep them tied in somehow. And you know, every season when we have a kid that hits an intermediate level, we give them their own setup. They get their own snowboard. They get the whole setup, gear, boots, the whole thing, so that they continue to ride. We did it initially because we were doing the junior snowboard instruction at Wyndham. And so they needed their own board. So that kind of initiated. And then when I was working at Burton, every year I got a new setup. So it was like, you know, if I knew someone who was my size, who had a beat up setup or didn't have, I was like, here, take it on.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, nah. I'm like, yo, I'm getting another one next year is going to be in my office. So no, it's all good. So that was built in, you know, based upon those experiences. But yeah, our goal is just to make sure we create snowboards.
Yeah. And then you're giving them a pathway that has almost endless possibilities, I'll say. You know, totally. And I think of, there's actually a psychology book that one of the chapters is Let Your Kid Skateboard.
Yeah.
And you could say skateboard, snowboard.
Right.
And it's take this as far as you want.
Right.
Take this opportunity, learn. It's a challenge that only the individual can really take on. Right. Like, you can't force anybody to skate. You can't force anybody to snowboard.
Right.
But as they grow in that, then giving them a pathway to something bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when Dan and I first started, Dan recommended a book, Shop Classes Soulcraft. And it was a gentleman who was a college professor, who quit his job and started building motorcycles. And was talking about how important it is to be able to master doing things with your hands. And so that built into what we tried to do. And, you know, we 4 years ago, so it's our fourth year in Albany. So 4 years ago, we got another grant from ShareWinter to expand programming. So 4 years ago, that's when we expanded to Albany. So we have about 90 kids in Albany that we work with. So in the span of 10 years, we went from 6 kids from Poughkeepsie to almost 200 between the Hudson Valley and the Capital District.
Wow.
So yeah, both programs run simultaneously. So on Sundays, we have a program running at Wyndham and a program running at Stratton at the exact same time.
Mm.
And, you know, these kids yet have, I have a few that have gotten to the point where we've given them gear. We gave one boy his gear today. I mean, this like a couple of weeks ago, because he's been in the program 3 years. And this year we found out that he joined the ski club at his school. You know, his mom's a single mom. He gets up every morning, every Sunday morning, because you have to be, the bus leaves the Boys and Girls Club about 6:30, 6:45. He gets up every morning on his own, walks from home to the Boys and Girls Club to catch the bus.
Mm.
Every morning. And then this year, joined the ski and snowboard club.
Can I walk that path with you for a second? Like, yeah. As your experience and then watching these kids, what are some of the things, like, and I'm going to kind of stumble through trying to, like, that's formulate fine. This thought, totally. But, like, this is a predominantly white sport.
Right.
What are some of the ways in which this opens or breaks down certain barriers for these kids with this opportunity? Like, just the idea that this is something that, you know, like you said, walking through the middle of Times Square, people are like, yo, this black guy's got a snowboard in his bags. Like, fucking, we don't do that. Like,
it wasn't even a bag. I was carrying it like a sword.
Right. So it's like, I mean, what is it about that experience that maybe opens up horizons or kind of breaks down some of the stigma? And then I feel like the snowboard culture is a very open culture.
Yeah.
And it's a very welcoming culture, and I'm very proud of that.
Yeah. At my point of entry, it had grown to that. But if you go back and talk to Keir, you go back and you talk to Russell.
Yeah.
You know, you go back and, you know, talk to some of those guys. It wasn't as much.
Yeah.
So I have to acknowledge that I came into this through the paths that they made.
Yeah.
So for us, it's like continuing that, because it's not really it's not one of those situations where, you know, we're not permitted or we're blocked from any sort of, sort of way. It's just the nature of how the industry is, how the community is. And then as a black adolescent, even not even going to say adolescent, I'm going to say as, you know, I'm going to air dirty laundry here.
Yeah.
In our community, we spend so much time telling ourselves what we don't do that we don't try to do things. When I was presenting this program to organizations, predominantly black organizations, I would get back from the person leading is like, oh, we don't do that. Our kids won't do that. We don't do that. I'm like, how about you know we don't do that if you never done it? I was like, I have 65 kids that beg to differ.
That will prove you wrong.
That beg to differ.
Right now.
And they have been in the program. About 65% of our kids have been in the program 3 years or more.
Yeah.
So I have kids that will dispel that notion. You know, it's the thing. Is that we don't do snow sports. We don't swim. And this is the reason why you got kids drowning, especially black kids, you know, because we're told we can't swim and they don't learn how to swim and they jump in the water. Especially when I was working at Stoked, we did surfing at Far Rockaway. And the first thing we did is we gave swim lessons to learn how to swim, because the kids didn't learn to swim. We said, you can't surf if you don't know how to swim. You know, there's some prerequisites to this.
Yeah.
So these, to me, it's not so much, I mean, it's a little both.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of breaking the, and this is like with Burton, what Culture Shifters is trying to do, is just changing the way that your mind thinks of a snowboarder when you think of a snowboarder.
Yeah.
And also introducing our kids to like, this is something you can do. Now, I grant it's expensive. And so really my goal in all of this is, and going back to the whole political thing again, my goal is, it's prohibited on our end from money and perception. Speaking about black people and people of color, you know, there's a barrier to entry as far as costs are concerned, but there's a self-inflicted barrier of entry. So that's dealing with that. But we also have kids here who have the barrier entry.
Absolutely.
You know, we have rural kids.
Yep.
That have that barrier entry. So for us, our program was always urban and rural.
Mm.
You know, that's the goal. Because what I wanted to do is I wanted to get these kids on the snowboard, on snowboards, and get these kids on chairlifts where they talk with one another and they understand that through this, they have similarities. So my worldview might be different from yours, but the fact that we both love this thing.
Yeah.
Makes a point of commonality where we can see each other as
we're both here right now. Yeah.
And so there is some similarities. There is something that we can take away from each other at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal. That's the ultimate goal.
So sick.
You know, so that's what I'm hoping. And, you know, we just happen to be locked into where we are, you know, is mostly, you know, it's urban, is kids of color, but we have a bunch like Cohoes. Cohoes is a predominantly white community, and they're predominantly under the poverty level.
Yep.
So they have the same financial barriers that the kids in, you know, Arbor Hill have.
Yeah.
So the goal really is, and that's in, you know, we are, and not to get on the soapbox, you know, we start this whole era that we live in and woke and DEI and these things, they don't understand that equity inclusion also comes from class level.
Yeah.
Also comes from an income level.
Big time.
You know, so our part of our, you know, a lot of it, because I'm a, you know, I'm a man of color that's leading this, and most of our kids are kids of color. But, you know, one of my kids who is now at the University of Albany, he grew up in the bricks in Poughkeepsie. So it's like, and he's been in the program. He's been in the program for like six years.
And I feel like that's exactly the point, is like, that I love that differentiating of like what hurdles are real life that you got to deal with, and what ones are kind of self-inflicted.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what the program, it does differentiate that, and it goes, oh, okay, yeah, I got stuff that I have to deal with, but in these ways, like,
yeah,
I can do whatever I want. I can break past this. I can overcome this. Right. And that knows no color. That knows, yeah.
And you know, and some of that self-inflicted, you know, again, comes from places where we were restricted from. So you get you're conditioned to think that it's not for you, or we don't do it. I think we don't do this. We ended up becoming like a sense of rebellion.
Yeah.
Since we weren't allowed to do it, we're going to say, oh, we don't want to do it anyway. We don't know. We don't do that.
Yeah.
So it's really trying to, again, acknowledge that there have been systemic barriers, and not to dismiss the systemic barriers, acknowledging that because of these systemic barriers, we've allowed ourselves to create barriers when they don't have to be.
Right. Right.
So, you know, it's a lot of that. And, you know, it's really, it's what people don't understand or don't realize is that SHRED is actually an acronym. So I created SHRED as an acronym, Snowboarders Helping Reimagine Education. That's what it is. So our whole goal is to reimagine what education could look like if you got a kid out on a snowboard.
Yeah.
A kid who's creative may not excel in the classroom, but he knows how to shoot behind a camera.
Yep.
He knows, you know.
Give him space for creativity. Yeah, give him space for creativity. He will blow it up.
And then even in what we teach, and we have a whole mental health piece component, which is based upon the resiliency or what you learned skateboarding and snowboarding,
mm-hmm.
you know, and applying those areas and those, you know, those situations, both urban, rural, both, you know, where you're dealing with stuff every day. You know, how do you become resilient? And also understanding the work that it takes to master something. You know, the whole piece of falling and, you know, snowboarding. Our first lesson is understanding and overcoming fear. You know, our mantra is fear, fail, flow. You know, first of all, you have to get over the fear. You have to understand that fear is a natural thing, and fear is what keeps us safe. But there's also irrational fears. And once you're able to get past that fear, then there's going to be failure involved. And snowboarding and skateboarding teaches that better than anything.
Every time.
Every time. You're going to fail every time. There's no way that you master something without failing.
And just when you think you won't, you catch an edge.
Oh, you catch an edge. Yeah. Yeah. And then the flow part comes from, you know, we were talking about psychology. There's a writer who wrote on flow states. And I got all that the year I was working at Stoked was the year that Art of Flight came out. And so our LA kids got to ride with Travis Rice.
Oh, man.
So I got to spend the day with Travis, got to talk to Travis and hang out with Travis. And it was incredible. But people say, who's your favorite snowboarder? And I put Travis in there, not because of what he does on the board, but just he's like a sage.
Yeah.
Like if you sat down and really talk with him, you're like, holy, he could be like Tony Robbins. He could have his own, you know, that type of, because it was just watching him talk with the kids, you know, and how humble he was and how he came from. And his father was told a story about how his father was on ski patrol. And that's how he, you know, got into snowboarding. They would sometimes sleep in the truck. But one of the kids was out there for the first time. And Travis was there, and we were talking about, you know, the movie. He's like, we saw this movie where this guy jumped out of a helicopter and went snowboarding. He's like, yeah, that was me. He's like, we got in trouble. We got in trouble with the FAA for that. So it's just, he was just mad. It was just so like deadpan. And so, yeah, that was me. But the kid knew that he had, there was a pro there.
Yeah.
A real famous pro. And he's like, you know, but what happens if I fall? And Travis kneeled down, because we were sitting in, like, we were sitting in bus seats. He kneeled down to the kid's level and he was like, falling's the fun part. And that kid went out and rode for his first time that day. You know, so there's so much, there's a power in what this culture provides, what this activity provides, that, you know, we just want our kids to experience it.
Yeah.
And to grow from it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Travis was a big influence on when cognitively how Shred was set up. Yeah. Just from talking to him.
Yeah, that's so sick. And I feel like any opportunity, Johnny's one that talks about this, is like any opportunity, well, when Scotty was here.
Right.
Right. Like Scotty to Johnny is that moment.
Yeah.
Right. Is that eye to eye moment where it's like, no, I see you. I see what you're trying to do. This is why we do this.
Right.
And it was like, as if Johnny needed it, you know, turned up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then Scotty goes like, yeah, I think Johnny's like one of the nastiest.
Oh, he,
like
everybody,
like urban snowboard, everybody. Like urban rail snowboarders.
Everybody. I hate to sound like I'm name dropping or shit, but, when I was doing the Snowbound Expo, Mary Walsh was there every year. So Mary and I got to become friends and we talk about it all the time. It's like, Johnny is your snowboarder's favorite snowboarder.
Yes. Yeah. Facts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like the most underrated snowboarder. Anytime you want to say who's the most underrated snowboarder, Johnny's the most underrated snowboarder. And even the media, the snowboard media will tell you that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's so awesome.
Yeah. He's very instrumental in what we do.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So your programs, it now, what exactly does that look like? Summer programs, and then congratulations on 930 Broadway.
Yeah.
Dude, what a process.
That's killer. I mean, that's the culmination of everything.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I was working at Stoked, my coordinator, we were walking through LA or something. And he's like, you know, it'd be sick is if we had like a warehouse we could turn into a skate park and our offices be in the skate park. And I was like, yo, that'd be so sick. That'd be so sick. So when I walked into that space and saw that it had a classroom, had office space, I was like, oh my God, this is the universe. So I had to do it. You know, I already said it's something I wanted to do. I mean, I was trying to do it in Newburgh. There was a space there that we were negotiating. We're trying to get this guy to let us use the space for a skate park and office. And he wanted us to do bicycles. And when I told him we don't do bicycles, he kind of like moved on. I was like, whatever.
Yep.
You know, it's like, I'm not going to change my vision just to, you know.
Yeah.
Get something, you know. So that was like, okay, fine. It wasn't the time. So it wasn't the time.
Life will send you signs like that.
Yeah.
It's like, this isn't it. This
yeah,
isn't
it's not the it. Fit. It wasn't it. So this is it. It's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of financial behind it. We're still trying to figure that out. You know, the landlords are working with us. They've been willing to work with us. I mean, they say they specifically built that space out for a skate park.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to figure out what happens next.
Yeah. So to for anybody listening, as a full description of the space, it's now the Shred Industries base that all of the programs can launch from. It's a full indoor skate park, open all winter, all summer. Working towards having some event space.
Yeah, working on expense space.
Yeah, and then having classrooms. So when we're, you know, talking about the ways in which the program is beneficial to the kids in other areas of their life.
Right.
That's what this space
right.
really feeds into. It's like, right. yeah, it's skating, it's snowboarding. It's also giving them a safe place to operate from, right. a room for growth, a room for learning.
Right. Yeah. It's everything that we do culminates in that spot. I mean, for years, we've been able to dial in the snowboarding part, but we've mm-hmm. never really been able to dial in the classroom aspects. You know, I have people that are like already signed up to teach classes. You know, I was talking about Mary Walsh. She wants to help with the journalism. Ben from Snowboarders Journal wants to help with the journalism piece. I'm speaking to Tim Zimmerman about doing the video piece.
Oh, and there's yeah. you're going to set up a podcast space.
Yeah, we're going to set up a podcast space.
Oh, Evan, we have competition. No. No, I think while we were talking about this earlier, I mean, right. just media in general
right.
and, you know, documentation, and there's a butt for every seat, right? It's
right.
like there's the writer, there's the host, there's the producer, there's right. the Danny when he steps up to the mic, and, you know, then the rest of his career is just built off of that one moment of being on the microphone,
right.
you know, and taking the reins. Is like, those are the moments that can change the trajectory for, you know, one of these kids.
Yeah, definitely.
You
definitely.
Know, so giving them these resources, right. giving them, you know, access right. to stuff like this.
Yeah. And we wanted to be, you know, it's so much, you know, I'm hustling, trying to find funding for it. And, you know, the ultimate goal for the space amongst all the programming is that we can secure enough funding where any kid in Albany or any kid in general can just come in there and skate for free.
Yeah.
That we don't have to charge. Right now, if you're over 10, if you're 10 and under, you get in for free.
Yeah.
But our goal is at 18 and under, we give you, I mean, it's like going to the Boys and Girls Club or going to the Y. You
right.
get a card, you come in, you show the card, and boom. You're in. You
yep.
come in and skate. You know, you can sign up for classes. You can sign up, you know, for snowboarding. You know, it gives us the autonomy to do what we want instead of asking. Because as I was saying, you know, we haven't been able to fully flesh out the vision for it yet, even though we've been here for 10 years, because we've constantly had to ask for space to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this provides us the space
yep.
where we can, you know, we have control over what is going on in there. You know, we can do whatever we want. We can teach whatever we want. We have the mental health piece, which now kids can come in there and they can get telehealth. We have a person who's a social worker in some of the prisons up north. She's writing the curriculum, and we're partnering with CDPHP on that project. So, you know,
huge.
Yeah. The goal is that any kid who needs services can get services there. They can come
Unreal.
Skate. They can come skate, and then they have a one-on-one with their, you know, with their counselor, with
yep.
their therapist.
Yep.
And they can go into classroom, we lock it off, we set up a time, they can go online and have that, you know, that telehealth, you know, session with
Unreal.
Their therapist. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. How are you guys fundraising now? What's your main form of fundraising?
Right now, everything is through grants. We get money from ShareWinner, we get money from Union, we get money from Burton. We get money from the Killington World Cup Foundation. There's a small organization down in Cold Spring, Keaton's Kids. They've been instrumental. They've been providing money. And so the skate park in itself, part of that is to be a revenue generator as well.
Yeah, producing cash flow. Yep.
Right, producing cash flow.
Well, shout out to all of them for seeing the vision. Again,
totally.
It comes down to everybody seeing the vision, and that's where these operations come together.
Yeah, for sure, for yep. sure, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that, now we're just really trying to get into the city involved. If we can get the city and the county involved, that's the big thing.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm working on right now. I'm going back into the political realm now.
Yeah.
It's like, God, I gotta get a suit.
Dusting off. I was gonna say dusting the suit off, or you have to buy one. At this point,
probably a little of both. I probably need more than one. One needs to be dusted off. The other one needs to be replaced. So yeah, it's dusting and buying one for the most part. But yeah, we're hoping to be able to lobby to get that.
Well, for anybody who's looking for a good birthday zone activity, party space with some activity involved, you know, bring the kids up, let them skateboard.
Yeah.
You know, learn a new skill. Yeah.
Learn a new skill. Come in. I mean, we have a great community, and, you know, we have kids that come in, they're trying to learn something, the community just hops in and helps teach, which to me, it's always fun to watch. It's always that.
Yeah.
That makes my day.
A big shout out to Johnny O'Connor.
Johnny.
Johnny O, dude.
Johnny, man. Johnny was the second person. So when I met Cliff is like, no, we got to go and introduce you to Johnny. Johnny would be so about this.
All about it.
Yeah. So he's been all about it. He's been supportive. You know, the Mash and Bash next weekend, the 16th.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so that's been our fundraiser at the end of the year. He's been doing that for years now. Yep. It was the Nightmare Before Christmas, and then we had to move it to Mash and Bash. Yeah, Johnny, he's always got a place.
Even when you guys first got in there, I mean, he was the first one with a mop. When you got into the skate park, I mean, was the first one.
No,
with
you
a
guys
broom
came
and a mop
in. You guys
just,
came in and killed
and
it.
And just, you know. Johnny said, yo, let's go. We got stuff to do.
He called me and said, what did you need?
Yep.
I got a crew. Yep. We're going to come down.
Let's
do
it.
Just tell me, let's do it. But yeah, he was, he's always, Johnny is, he's your snowboarder's favorite snowboarder. He's the uncle to our kids.
Dude.
Uncle Johnny, my kids call him Uncle Johnny.
Uncle Johnny, dude.
They're like, can we go stay at Johnny's? Like, they don't want to come stay at my apartment. They want to come down here and hang out with Johnny.
Yeah.
They want to stay at Johnny's. So, can we go stay at Johnny's? And anytime I say, yeah, I think we might stay at Johnny's this weekend, they're all about it. That's, he's family.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
Any more shout outs you want to give while we're, while we're hot, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, Johnny, shout out to Johnny. Shout out to LJ Enriquez, our other ambassador. Shout out to SK, who's our new unk. Shout out to Ashley at Burton for stepping up. You know, shout out, you know, she's going to do remarkable things at Burton, and I'm so excited to see what she's building. And she's so passionate, and she seems to have them. They're working with her, and that's the direction they want to go. So I'm so psyched, and I'm looking forward to working with her there some more. Constance Beverly from the Share Winter Foundation, you know, she's been like our angel investor from the past 6 or 7 years. We were supposed to be kicked off like 3 years ago. She keeps pushing the paperwork through. So,
yeah, you need that.
You know, we have our differences. We have our differences of opinion every now and then. But
yeah,
you know, we're still tight, and it's good to have someone that you can be like, but then at the end of the day, like, okay, you're still my peoples. We're still good. That's what it was. It's over. You know, it's not personal. It's just where we are at the same time. So she understands where I'm coming from. I understand where she's coming from. So that, you know, and Brian and Omar, my brothers from
Hoods to Woods.
We are actually, this weekend, we are partnering with Hoods to Woods for Shaping Our Futures, which is an event at Sugarbush, where we're bringing kids from the program. They're bringing 6 kids. So one of our kids dropped out, so I'm bringing 5. And they're going to learn how to build features in Sugarbush Park.
Sick.
Yeah, all weekend. So they're going to build a feature. It's going to be put in the park, and Sunday, community day, everyone's going to hit it. So, yeah, so it's, again, it's that thing about like providing opportunities for them to learn where there are careers in the industry. So we're psyched about this. Shout out to, you know, to PJ and Ashley and the Sugarbush crew. Shout out to Crush from Snowboy, who is my ace. We bonded over his records. Like, he'll post records on Instagram, and we started talking, and he called me up, and so we came up 3 summers ago with the idea for Hollow. He came up with the idea for Hollow Hollow, asked me to come aboard and kind of, you know, he had it all dialed in. I just was there just to provide just, you know, questions if he had questions or whatnot. But that's our, this year will be our 3rd year. It's one of the stops on the Snowboy Tour at Mount Hood every July. It's a gathering of, you know, representation within snowboarding. We go for 3 days. He sets up a sick setup on at Timberline. So we partner with Timberline to do it right there in the summer heat. And we bring kids out from the program. So our kids get to go out and see a mountain out west for the very first time. And watching them see Mount Hood for the first time is always it's the best. As soon as you come, you're going out 32 and you come around the curve and it pops out. They're like, oh my God. So yeah, that's always, I try avoid wrecking because I want to see their faces in the rear view. But yeah, but so that's
everything
weird.
They thought they knew just goes out the
out the window. So yeah, those are experiences. And then last year, we were able to bring Hoods to Woods into the fold. So, you know, it's one of those things like we're all in this, you know, doing this work and working together, and we try to help each other as best we can. So,
yep.
There's a lot of partnerships.
We have to. You know, that's what we do. It's
Now, there's not one person, one organization that's going to be able to do everything or get everybody.
Yeah, and it's like when you're the outreach for a specific. I mean, look at our platform. It's like we're doing what we do here,
right?
And what that involves is making sure the right people have a moment. That's our job.
And
right?
I appreciate
it. And
you.
It's like that's it. If we have to be in place to give that moment, you have to be in place to have the outreach to the kids that you do.
No, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you giving me this moment. So this has been great.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for coming on. We look forward to what you guys, you know, have coming up in the future. Some nice skate nights in Albany.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do it.
You know?
Overnight. You missed it. We had a contest with the Arizona skate team a couple weeks ago.
I seen that.
Yeah. That was sick. The edit's supposed to come out any day now. That was another Daniel Broadwell hookup. So shout out to Daniel, who, God, I mean, I've been talking to a bunch, but when you said shout out him and...
listen, the list goes on and on, right?
But there are certain individuals that are super super important, and I know, and they know that I know that it's important.
Yeah.
But for some reason or another, it slips because they're just there. And Averyn from Angry Snowboarder is another one who, from day one, when I had this idea, I pitched it to him and asked if it was whack. He's like, nope, I got you.
Yep.
And he's been promoting us from day one. So Averyn, I didn't shout him out in Snowboarder. I felt horrible about it. And I reached out to him and told him I felt horrible. He's like, you know, I don't do it for the shout outs.
Yeah.
But you're getting a shout out tonight, bro.
Yeah.
You're getting a shout out tonight. Love you, bro.
Yeah. Danny, thanks for your time,
thank
man.
You.
Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome back anytime.
Oh, yeah. This is fun. I might just come in and just hang.
Yeah. And when you guys please have your podcast, will you let us
on? Yeah. Come on in. Yeah. No, you guys can teach it. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're going to be the instructors.
Yeah.
Danny, you're the man. That's all I got to say is you're the absolute man.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
And
guys
again, thanks for serving as an example for us.
Yes.
Of like what it means to give back with that. I don't need a shout out. Right? It's like, because we know. Like, we know we're doing it. So
you're my guy. For
that's
sure.
That's it. Cheers.
Cheers.
Appreciate you.
This is the Hear Hear podcast from the Crispin's Wyndham House Studios, hosted by Jesse Novak, produced by Evan Gutcha. Thank you for listening.